Speaking of emotion, there's been a lot expressed on social media. So let's go out to Chris Ruby, who's a social media and technology expert. Chris, thanks again for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So,
we have so much to talk about.
I know.
About.
Where, it's true. Where should we start is my question.
I mean, I have to tell you, I've never seen anything like what we have going on here. This has turned into the wild, wild west of social media. People are tweeting out these things and posting things online that are just unprecedented, right? That all of the traditional social media etiquette type rules have gone right out the window. I mean, we can open with the Michelle Obama tweet if you want to talk about that.
That was a Facebook post, right? About her? Is that what we're talking about?
No, the elected official actually tweeted that.
Ugh.
That she was so excited for someone classy to be in office other than the, quote, ape in heels that we've previously had.
And this was a woman who tweeted this?
Yeah, it was, and so she's subsequently been fired.
Good.
After that. And then another elected official wrote back to her and said, "You made my day, Pam. Couldn't agree more," or something of that nature.
And did that person get fired?
I'm not sure what happened to that one, but I know the one that wrote it did.
The one, I think, was the mayor, right? Or something?
Yep.
So the mayor, yeah. Clay Mayor Beverly. Clay must be the city. Beverly Wallach is another female, another woman. Praised Taylor's post, writing, "You just made my day, Pam." Wow. And online petitions have formed calling for both Taylor and Wailing to be fired. And they were going to address this on a Charleston council meeting on Tuesday. It's what, today, right? It's just awful. I mean, it's just a lot of awful emotion flying around. Of course, social media is where everyone goes to put it out there.
Yeah, I mean, that's just one example. We're seeing, I mean, even worse than that, right? So if you look a few days ago, you had hashtag rape Melania and hashtag assassinate Trump trending on Twitter.
Wow. I saw that. I was surprised because Twitter has been so famous for censoring people, and most notably, you know, hashtag Hillary in prison or hashtag Hillary for prison. Twitter made it so that it was impossible to put that. They censored Hillary to prison, but yet you can put hashtag rape Melania. It was just shocking to me that they would allow that, because Twitter's been very open about that.
It is shocking. You have people that are, you know, sending really angry tweets about it right now, because what it just points out again is the huge double standard, you know, that you're talking about. Why is it that hashtag Hillary for prison was banned, but when you're talking about raping the president-elect's wife, right, that's allowed, and when you're also talking about killing the president-elect, that's allowed as well. I mean, that's just it's insane.
Why doesn't the FBI get involved with that? Isn't that one of the things they're supposed to do if people make threats through the social, through the internet?
Yeah.
Doesn't the FBI have to get involved?
They
probably
have
the manpower.
There are so many.
Yeah, they have the manpower
to
do it.
But they can't go after every single one. What I will say is that there was a story yesterday of, you know, a San Diego CEO specifically. Let's talk about his tweet. So I think that they're going after people, right, that are already sort of in the public eye, or people know them, or they have a business, right? So this one, this nice person named Matt Harrigan, right, he goes, "I'm going to kill the president-elect, bring it Secret Service, getting a sniper rifle, and perching myself where it counts. Find a bedroom in the White House that suits you," and a bunch of expletives that I won't say. "I will find you."
Who is this guy that
he
tweeted
was,
this?
He's a CEO of just a, you know, a regular business that, I guess, you know, based on that, he was then put on leave. They're all being, quote, put on leave, to put it nicely.
Well, but again, that you would think that would be an offense, like something you'd put in prison for, threatening the life of the president. Look, Mike, tell your story. What did you do that got you in trouble with the Secret Service?
I simply talked about how I wanted to have sex with a lady that was formerly in the Secret Service. I had met her earlier in the day on Dr. Drew's HLN show, and she was way hotter than I could have ever anticipated someone in the Secret Service being, and I made comment about that on the radio, and the next day the Secret Service came to investigate me.
Two of them. I mean,
wow.
That's how serious they take these things. And that was merely because President Obama was sort of going to make a visit like 2 weeks later to the Los Angeles area. It's crazy, right?
And when did that happen?
Probably about a year and a half
ago,
2 years ago,
yeah,
something like that.
2 years ago.
Yeah. You know what? I think something like that probably, you know, I guess it was already on their radar. You have notoriety, and it was more of an isolated incident. Right now, if you have something trending, I can't possibly see how they can even keep up with all of these people that they'd want to go after. But you're absolutely right that you would think in any normal sort of situation that's what they would be doing.
I'm seeing another set of memes going around that's directed against particularly cable news. There's turn off CNN out there. Crazy.
After all the WikiLeaks stuff, yeah. I mean, people are like going crazy about mainstream media. This election, I'll give you a perfect example, right? So I thought that SNL skit was really good where you see Dave Chappelle and all these people watching the election. And so for the election viewing party, I was like the equivalent of the Dave Chappelle in the room, right? Because I knew what was happening. And I told people, I said, Trump's going to win. And they looked at me like I was a crazy person, right? And they were all like, there's no way, who is this lunatic, right? And then there was just a total meltdown in the room, and then it was like silent and no one was talking. But the truth is, if you had been reading Twitter every night till 4 a.m. and watching these WikiLeaks as each new dump came and watching regular people turn into citizen journalists, you would not have been surprised by the outcome of this election.
Really?
You wouldn't have been. I wasn't at all. No, because I was watching it. I was watching people get angry and angrier and angrier by the minute, right, or by the tweet. And people really felt it. You know, there's several videos that have gone viral, right? If you watch mainstream media, what they said about this, they all said there's no way Trump is going to win. If you only watched mainstream media, you pretty much were assured that Trump is going to lose this election. There's no way he
by a landslide,
win.
Yeah.
But if you really were following this election on social media, those are the people that knew he had a real chance at winning. So I think this also just, again, shows such a breakdown between traditional media and social media.
It's funny because I always think about social media being more of a kind of an echo chamber, you know, where people only heard what, how did you get a, you know what I mean? You sort of get to pick and choose, and there's algorithms that send you things that the social media units know you're going to like. How did you break free and see bigger trends?
Well, I think you had to look out for them, right? So, like, for example, on Twitter, you had to be putting in hashtag WikiLeaks to start finding those things. And then if you started changing who you were following, that definitely, you know, added to it. If you were traditionally only following mainstream media, you weren't going to see a lot of it. So you did have to look out for it a bit more. I will say that. But even on Facebook, right, like there were certain features where you could actually see like where each candidate stood on certain issues, and you could, again, follow hashtags within Facebook for that.
Really interesting. I did not expect you to say that. I want you to give me your soothsaying opinion about what these trends are now you're reading and how it's likely going to play out.
You know what I'm seeing? I'm seeing the greatest divide that I have ever seen, ever, on social media in this nation right now. I'll tell you, I had gone for a trip that was out of the country, right? And I came, and that was on election night. And then I came back, and I wrote about this. The energy was probably different when I returned than when I left. And you can feel it. You can feel it with the people that you're around, the people in the airport, and most importantly, you could feel it online, right? So I was without Wi-Fi for 3 days, which was crazy while all this was going on. I came back, and I've just never seen anything like this. And I have to tell you, I don't think it's getting any better. I mean, I see total wars breaking out online, and I also see what people are forgetting is that they're connected to colleagues, they're connected to people that they'd like to work with, they're connected to the media, and relationships are breaking at such a rapid pace that I don't think anything can be done to repair them. And if we keep going in that direction, it's not good. That's what I can say.
Anybody picking up anything productive? Any sort of movement in a way that, you know, that could actually make a real difference? Or is it just a bunch of emotion being splattered all over the place?
I think it's a bunch of emotion. I wish that we could turn it around into something that was a little bit more productive. But right now, I feel like people are still reeling over this. I think half the country is really, you know, bitter and incredibly upset about this. And as more things keep happening again, it's because I feel that the majority of people were unprepared for, you know, what was going to happen because of the bias that was put out by the media. And they didn't know the actual truth about what was happening. And again, you have to watch some of those videos on it, the compilation videos of them telling the public over and over again, there is no way that Trump will ever be elected president.
And now I keep wanting there to be something positive or productive coming out of this, Mike. I mean, you know what I mean? That makes sense?
Yeah, I would love that. And I think that most reasonable people would want a positive route forward. But it's hard to see that with this amount of chaos and this kind of derisive, it's corrosive, the kind of nature of people's rhetoric. And I do feel like it's going to die down. It has to, right?
I would think, right? No? Help me.
It has to die down. I hope it dies down. I mean, here's another perfect example, right? Let's talk about the Grubhub CEO who was a boss who urged his employees who agreed with Trump's rhetoric to resign in a letter that went out to all of them.
Oh, my gosh.
To all of his employees.
Well, I will give him this. That's a pretty diplomatic way of handling it. As opposed to just firing them, he let them know, you're probably better for you to just get out of this company.
What kind of company was it, do you know?
Yeah, they're like a Seamless. It's a food delivery service. So it's not just... So what he did, he tanked his own stock by doing that, by the way. I just want to tell you. And also, someone like me who uses these apps all the time to eat, I saw that and I was like, I will never, ever order off of Grubhub because of what he said. Because when did it become okay that you can put out statements like that? If you agree with someone that I don't support, don't work here. Please resign. I mean, what's happening right now is that people are so afraid, you know, they're so afraid of the unexpected that it's just a free-for-all for everyone. That's what's really going on.
Well, that's what I'm wondering, if we could just all just kind of wait a second until we find out what he's actually intending to do, right?
I have to tell you, if you watched his 60 Minutes interview, he actually did scale it back quite a bit from the Trump that we have traditionally seen in media. If he stays on that course, I think things would be better and people would feel a little more comfortable. But he also, by the way, quoted the social media quite a few times in that interview in terms of why he won and how he spent less money than Clinton on the election. And the reason he won is because of his use of Twitter and social media.
He has also said he's going to continue to use Twitter from the White House. Is that something? Is that the breakthrough? Is that the social media has now finally become the mainstream media of this country?
I think it is. I think that's a great way to put it. It has, and I think it will continue that way, and we're all going to be anxiously awaiting what he is going to be putting out on Twitter. I will say this. The last few weeks of his campaign, when he had sort of handed over the Twitter account to someone in his administration or campaign manager, things were a little bit better for him, right? So he starts tweeting out his stream of consciousness when he's given back the keys to tweet.
Yeah.
So it would be better to let an expert sort of help him with that, especially for the sake of everyone else protesting and rioting right now. And that, by the way, is another divisive issue.
We're talking to Chris Ruby, social media and technology expert. Maybe there's a job for you in the White House, Chris. I'm just saying.
I hope so.
What is your website again?
RubyMediaGroup.com and ChrisRuby.com, and you can find me at Sparkling Ruby if you want to tweet
Ruby.
Me.
That's right. Let's go out to our friend Esme. Go ahead, Esme.
Hey, guys. Hey there. You live, by the way.
You live.
So I just wanted to give you a little bit of brightness. There's, trying to stay off social media, but I've engaged a little bit. And this morning I was talking to somebody who actually went to some protests, I believe, in the Denver, Colorado area, and asking them, like, what else is going on, and it sounds like it's very disorganized, but that there's a lot of people who are now spending more money towards Planned Parenthood, calling their local government, their representatives, their senators, and I think it's happening, but it's horribly disorganized and not unified at all.
But that's interesting that at least there is some positive movement action being channeled, which is, Chris, what I keep saying, which is that there's a lot to be done. And if you're upset, a lot's going to return to the states and local government, local organizations. This is the time when you should put that to work.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it's a lot fewer people than I would like to see saying stuff like that.
So. How are things in Wisconsin? That was an interesting state in all this, how things played out.
You know, I'm pretty sheltered. I live in a really small town. I haven't seen anything that was, you know, fueled by hate or anything so far. But I knew that Trump was going to win Wisconsin. because everybody I talked to was voting for him. And, like, I even spoke to a couple girlfriends who were horribly disgusted by his comments about women and said, well, he's still the better choice. I'd rather have him than a liar.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, that's probably the case for most people out here. And
that was an interesting position to take. But thank you, Esme, as always. Appreciate it.
Have a good one.
All right, Chris, we're going to say goodbye to you again. It's okay. Spark. Give us that Sparkle website again.
At Sparkling Ruby and rubymediagroup.com.
There you go. Chris, we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you
right,
for having me.
You betcha.
Thank you so much.
Our number is 800-222-5222. Midday Live, Dr. Mike Catherwood. It's Talk Radio 790 KBC.